Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KCoRadio.com.
Okay, our guest today is Marilyn Moskowitz, and she is a licensed clinical social worker. Woo! And one of our clinical supervisors for Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. She's done work with us now for a few years, and always good to have conversations with Marilyn. So I'm looking forward to the show, and the decks are officially cleared. So good morning, Marilyn.
Good morning, Scott. Does this mean I get to take it away?
You get to wish the people in Radioland.
Well, that was my line.
Well, go. It's just
hey, folks,
line.
This is the first time I've ever been on radio, so what I want to do is say hello to all you folks in Radioland, USA.
Or your general line. Listening area. We'll edit that out of the webcast, obviously, because she didn't say hi to the people in Webland. Internet land.
I prefer Radio Land. Take it any way you want.
All right, 1-760-337-8874 if you'd like to come into Radio Land and speak with Marilyn this morning. Our topic is Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, a.k.a., because we don't do acronyms here, except for a.k.a., I suppose, ADHD. And ADHD typically is, if you come into mental health through children's, ADHD is probably your most common place that you begin to learn about mental health symptoms. Is it the most common childhood disorder?
ADHD is certainly a very common childhood disorder. And many of the clients who come in are diagnosed with ADHD, either as a primary diagnosis or has a secondary diagnosis.
And is this kind of like a condition that it must cause problems, otherwise it wouldn't have been identified. What kind of problems does one experience with attention deficit?
One,
blah, blah, blah. Or two, or however many people experience it.
One is, we have to look at something called context if we talk about the problems ADHD causes. So obviously if children are outside playing, playing games, playing tag, playing on video games, running around, playing dodgeball, tetherball, it doesn't cause a problem. During the summers when children aren't in school and perhaps they're in day camp or they're doing crafts or they're hanging out at home doing chores or, again, playing, which is really the major job of childhood, it doesn't create problems for the most part. So it creates something called an impairing condition when we talk about context. The context that most often is associated with the impairment is being in school and having to sit and pay attention in a primarily visual auditory manner in terms of learning.
That's an important function at school.
It's probably the most important function at school. Okay, now one of the questions I'm asked many times is, well, when I was a kid, or when I was in school, you know, we didn't hear about ADHD much, and it never seemed to be a problem. How come it's a problem now? One of the reasons it's a problem now, in a sense, is school's much more demanding, even in the elementary grades. It's demanding in the sense that children need to, even in kindergarten, first grade now, they have homework, and they need to sit and pay attention in a visual and auditory mode. It's also demanding in the sense that children have much less playtime. Families, parents tend to be more fearful. Children are inside after school instead of running around the neighborhood and playing. When most people who are adults now were children, think about what you folks used to do after you got home from school. You went outside.
Hit the ground and run.
You hit the ground and ran and played and jumped. You were on your bicycle.
Figured out the neighbor with the best snack and ran over there.
You may have been on skateboards. You grouped in packs and you ran through the neighborhood, and there were lots of kids outside playing. ADHD, when children play a lot, is not a problem, okay? when schools weren't as demanding in the elementary grades in terms of visual and auditory learning, there was no impairing condition. Remember, ADHD is an impairing condition in a certain context, okay? One of the things we recommend is many parents, after their children come home from school, they want their kids to sit down and begin doing homework.
Because there's a lot of it. Oh, by the way, I have an 8-year-old, so.
There's a lot of it. There's a lot of it for sure. But you're taking a child that's been in the school 6 to 7 hours. The majority of the time has been sitting and paying attention, again, in a verbal, auditory way. Yeah. And you're requiring that child to sit for another 2 hours. And by the time the child's done, there's no more daylight, especially now, so the kid can't go outside and play. So what we do is we help the parent restructure. One of the things we do. So what we like to see is kids come home from school, they're outside, and they're playing. Playing is very, very important. It develops, helps children develop developmentally. Okay? It's the way children have of, the way the brain has of sorting things. If you're very, start for you adults out there, remember what it was like for you to play outside with your friends. What it added to your life, how important it was for you to jump and run. I could go into the rates of childhood obesity, which is in the news. I could go into type 2 diabetes, pediatric, as a result of children being much less active than they did in the past. But after that little blurb, I will shift back into ADHD.
Okay, 1-760-337-8874 is the phone number. We're here today with Marilyn Moskovitz, licensed clinical social worker. The topic today is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And Marilyn, I'm going to kind of stop and pull something out of what you were saying. You're talking about context and talking about attention deficit and really saying that the place where attention deficit is most noticeable in its impairing condition is in the school environment where, you know, kids have to sit down, be quiet, focus, and it's mostly auditory and visual.
Also in homework.
Okay, and in home, yeah, with an additional 2 hours of bonus sitting down time thrown in at the end of the day.
Which makes for an 8-hour day that children are basically sitting and learning in both an auditory and visual manner without moving their bodies.
I want to close in on the social impact of this, and I guess for children to develop their sense of self-worth and who they are in this world, school performance, the ability to sit still, be quiet, focus in an auditory and visual manner, and then complete the tasks that are assigned in somewhat of a timely and correct fashion, becomes real important in terms of who you are, because that's kind of a real defining role. I mean,
absolutely.
We don't say, hey, you're such a good player. Great math student.
Let me comment on that, because that's absolutely of utmost importance. Like for you adults, you're required to be successful at your job, okay? We all know how important it is for us when we work at jobs to feel a sense that we can do the work, that we have status, we're respected by our fellow staff, that our supervisors are approving of what we do, that we can deliver the goods. Our self-esteem is taken from that. It's a very, very important thing for us. Those who have ever experienced an inability to work for whatever reason, to produce appropriately at a profession or at a job, know how crushing the experience can be. So I want you to remember that as I talk about what happens with ADHD kids in school who have the experience of not being able to do the work. What happens to them is failure is a very, very distressing event. And because these kids have a problem paying attention, this disorder has to do with a deficit and the ability to pay attention. Because they have a problem paying attention and they cannot do the work many times. And so they begin a cycle of failure. Many times this creates a lot of anxiety, as it would with anyone, when you're in a classroom and you can't do the work. And the children get pretty anxious and they start getting very restless. They might poke others. They're inattentive. They daydream. All this creates a situation. They can't do the work. And so these pervasive feelings of failure, they start going down. And once they've been in a school system for a while,
they can anticipate the failure.
They anticipate the failure, and they can't perform at the level necessary to be successful. So they get into a failure syndrome. They start to do work. It feels difficult. And feelings of depression and low self-esteem and failure come over them. And after a while, they become phobic, which means...
Why even try?
Which means, why even try? And they give up. And they'll complain about being bored. They'll complain about not being able to do the work. It's not interesting. The teacher doesn't like me. And all those factors may come into play, because when a kid can't do the work, a teacher who has 36 kids in a classroom a lot of times doesn't know what to do with that kid and tries things and then kind of gives up. And so it's very, very distressing for the kid and very distressing for the teacher. There are things, there are ways to remedy that situation. One is to make adjustments in the classroom. One is medication. One is to, one of the things behavioral health does is we have a program for ADHD children who are, the primary diagnosis is ADHD. A secondary diagnosis might be something like anxiety or an adjustment to a disorder with depression. But kids come to us when there is an impairment. If a child's ADHD but doesn't have an impairing condition, they don't usually come to our attention.
Is that possible? I mean, is that something that occurs?
Where it occurs is kids who are pretty adaptive, and all kids are pretty adaptive to an extent. And so in the early grades, if the ADHD isn't a very severe case, okay, they can make do. Or if the school catches it early and starts making accommodations in the classroom, it may not show up to the extent. Or another thing is one subdiagnosis with associated with ADHD is an attention deficit disorder without hyperactivity. And these are
kinder,
kids,
gentler attention deficit.
In a way, but these kids tend to slip through the cracks because they aren't behavior problems. They still have extreme problems doing the work. But they tend to daydream their way through classes.
How would we separate that from, say, I don't know, say, just intelligence in general? How does that get tested or noted or anything? I mean, so you've got the C student just kind of floating through school, and they do C work, so they're not really causing anybody any pain. How do we begin to, do we even wonder whether or not there's an A student hiding behind some attentional problems there, or... Or just kind of, it's not causing us any pain, let's let it go.
Again, look at the concept of an impairing condition, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you have parents, perhaps, or a school, perhaps, that expects A work, but is getting C work, then it may be considered an impairing condition. But most often, average is average, and performing at an average level at a C level is considered acceptable.
If you're not disrupting anyone else.
If you're not disrupting anyone else. The problem with a lot of attention deficit disorder children is that they're not able to perform at C level. Because even today in schools, C level, you have to do the work. And you have to do it at a fairly competent level. And so again, these children sometimes slip through the cracks.
So, it's almost reassuring in a way that the condition will eventually impair you enough that something is done about it, because it may almost be a bigger price to pay, I suppose, to not have the condition detected and to sacrifice some personal development in terms of who you could have been, because no one really caught it when they were. And so it's almost like if you had slightly off eyesight. And you could just, it slowed you down enough in reading and processing so that you weren't able to do as well. Okay. And nobody ever tested your eyes.
Scott, sticking with your metaphor, if you had slightly off eyesight, but you were able to compensate and you had some fairly adaptive coping mechanisms, it wouldn't be picked up. Okay? And again, kids, this disorder has nothing to do with intelligence. A lot of times kids who have ADHD, because they have a string of difficulties at school, they feel like they're stupid, and they, because their self-esteem is pretty poor, but this has nothing to do with intelligence, and most of them are fairly astute in terms of intelligence, okay? They've got it.
Okay.
But they need accommodations, and there's ways to do that through the schools, and the schools are usually very, very cooperative once these kids are identified.
So what we'll do is, in 2 minutes, we're going to take the top of the hour break. We'll talk about the accommodations after the break, so stay tuned, people, because that's known in radio business as a tease. So, but what we're looking at, just in kind of terms of summary, is we're looking for someone who plays fine, perhaps, but in when they're expected to sit still and be quiet and attend visually and listen, as they typically are in school, they have performance problems that may or may not include disruptive behaviors because of boredom and restlessness. So there's like an attentional component, and there may be a discouragement or an emotional component to that also.
Well, there's a profound attentional component in terms of, again, if you have a job and for children, school is their job, okay?
Right.
You spend 8 hours a day at your job. They spend 6 to 7 hours a day at their job. It's very important for them to be successful at their job, and it's very important for them to advance because they hit all the earmarks of their job. The price they pay in terms of feelings of failure, the feelings of low self-esteem, is huge if they cannot do the work necessary for them to succeed at their job. School is very, very important, and it should be. What we need to do is help these kids so they can become successful at school and successful in the community and successful in their homes.
Perfect. That takes us right up to the break. This is Let's Talk About It, sponsored by Purifon Behavioral Health Services. We'll be right back after the top of the hour with more of Marilyn Moskowitz.
You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service, Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
Welcome back and good morning. You're listening to Let's Talk About It, your voice for radio wellness here in the Imperial Valley and Yuma Valley and Mexicali Valley and San Luis Valley and any valley you might be listening to us. Okay, you guys up on the top of the ridges too. We'll say good morning to you too. This is your host, Scott Dudley, and I'm here today with Marilyn Moskowitz, LCSW, licensed clinical social worker, and she does some supervision for Imperial County. She is like the works with young therapists as they work through their internship period towards licensure, and then serves as kind of a expert consultant for the county. And it's a fun person to hang out with, a great person to talk to. And if you listen to the first half hour of the show, you've already learned a whole bunch about attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which is our topic today. So welcome back. 1-760-337-8874 is the phone number. And again, if you have any questions, you got somebody here that knows a lot about the stuff. So something lights you up, give us a call. It certainly makes the show more interesting. We're glad to hear from you, okay? All right. Marilyn, welcome back.
Okay.
Did you figure out an intro line for the second half of the show?
Yes. Well, I want to comment on something. I want to talk about the strengths associated with the ADHD diagnosis.
So it's not all gloom and doom.
No, it's not all gloom and doom. And actually, some very successful CEOs of top companies, very successful teachers, very successful people in all professions that required sustained attention do have ADHD to some extent. Okay, the strengths associated with ADHD, and sometimes parents see these things and are confused by it, because kids with ADHD show something called lock-in concentration. They have the ability to concentrate, lock in, and work on something that they're very, very interested in, or either that or highly motivated to do, beyond fatigue, okay, that would stop people without the disorder. So that ability to have that lock in concentration and work beyond fatigue is something that's rather valued in our society, especially in the top echelons of business and other professions. And so people, that's
field work. It's valued in field work.
But it's also valued with CEOs who work long stretches
of time. Absolutely. Well, I'm trying to think where it's not valued.
Okay.
Get all over.
But realize that. And field work's a little bit different because it doesn't involve sustained attention that's visual and auditory.
Other than watching where you're cutting the lettuce so you don't leave fingers in the
field. But again, that's physical.
Right.
Okay. So this is a strength associated with ADHD kids. Where parents kind of get confused is they understand this is an attention deficit disorder and the kids have a hard time paying attention. But then when kids are really interested in something, it's hard to break into that lock-in attention because they're very, very focused.
Such as riveted to a video game, for example? Or
Video games are a little bit different because of the medium. Okay.
It's riveting for everyone?
It's riveting for everyone, okay? But something like building a model, something that a kid's really, really interested in doing, where they just focus and they can just work at it for a very long time, and then they don't pay it. It's the lock-in concentration.
Is this type of behavior or this ability consistent across attention deficit, or is it sometimes noticeable and other times less so?
Again, it corresponds with interest or motivation.
So
what I like to say, and I'm not sure this is scientifically correct, but in terms of my observations, that high motivation, high interest trumps ADHD.
Okay.
Okay? And so oftentimes what you'll also have is a kid who's created a really good bond with a teacher, and the kid is motivated by the teacher. The kid thinks the world of the teacher. And the kid will shine in that classroom and do very well and not do so well in the other classrooms where there's not
so there
either
can be
the
some
motivation
relational,
or the interest.
Relational ties that can build up
absolutely
to cause this
absolutely
kind of state of.
And that's one of the reasons why we want parents and teachers to use something called positive reinforcement or giving recognition to kids for jobs well done and helping shape behavior in a positive manner rather than a negative manner. Let me give an example. Negative manner is, you never do this. You always do that. Why can't you da-da-da-da-da-da-da? You drive me nuts. Frustrated parent, older sibling, teacher, grandma, whatever. Positive reinforcement or shaping behavior in a positive manner would be something like, hey, you know, you did a really nice job. Hey, can you help me with this? Wow, you know, good job. Just using positives to shape behavior.
Is that something that someone can just turn on or off, or is it something that requires a little practice and skill building?
Actually, it's something that requires a lot of practice and skill building because it seems to be the way most people operate. It's a little bit different, okay? So it requires a lot of skill building, which gets me to our ADHD intervention program that we have developed at Behavioral Health. It's a skill-based program. We teach children skills, and we teach parents skills. And we help teachers make modifications in the classroom. So it's a three-part program.
Is this kind of based on? So let's start with ADHD is an intentional disorder problem. Period. The end. You've got an intentional problem, and then you've got some emotion because your attention causes problems primarily in school, as you said. So now you've got an intervention program that begins to teach this as a life management strategy. So you begin to teach and study the skills of how to maintain and focus your attention.
One of the things we do, we can't change ADHD.
But you can change how you manage yourself.
We can give children and parents management skills, okay? We teach children and parents what you might call self-management skills. They are techniques that allow kids to slow down, center themselves, stabilize themselves, and pay attention. We teach parents, we work with parent and child. We teach parents the use of praise in shaping behavior. We do parenting education, and we also teach them and show them the same skills in terms of self-management and stabilization and attention focusing as we do with the kids, because these skills apply to everyone, whether no matter what your age. They're very, very useful.
And so you take these skills, and I'm guessing they begin to bear fruit fairly quickly. And
immediately.
Kids begin to feel better because people notice that they're doing better, and this kind of starts driving the circle in a different direction.
Right, right. And that's the idea.
So where does this break down? Where do you commonly begin with an attention deficit child walking in the door into this program?
What we begin with is something called education about the disorder.
Okay.
Because many times there's a lot of confusion, and people don't understand the inherent strengths in some of these kids. And there's a real misperception on the kids' part and the parents' part in terms of the children's ability and the children's intelligence. And one of the important things is that folks understand that this is a disorder. It's a very common disorder. About 3 times more boys are diagnosed with it than girls. But it has nothing to do with intelligence. Very intelligent people also have ADHD and ADD.
You know, it occurs to me that I could see why it would be difficult to pull strengths out of something that has disorder and deficit in the same title to describe it, because it's kind of pointing you in a non-strength direction, is it not?
Well, that's one of the things, and also the history behind it, because, again, people only come in when it's an impairment. They don't come in when it's not a problem, okay? So they come in when it's an impairing condition. The fact that it's an impairing condition says there's been frustration, there's been feelings of failure, there's been lots of difficulties the family and the child has experienced before they get to us. So what we do is we educate what ADHD is and what it isn't, the strengths inherent in that. We build skills in terms of self-management and how to be successful at school. We educate parents and kids. And we build skills, and we introduce things like family meetings. We help structure both after school, at school time, homework time. We do an awful lot. It's a very good program. We have very skilled case managers who are the interventionist. If you have questions about that, I would urge you to contact Behavioral Health
at the 42-4000 number, or call right now, because we've got a radio show going, 760-337-8874, because
yes,
we're here with Marilyn Moskovich, LCSW, and she's got, like, the whole thing in front of her, so I'm sure it's there. I have a question. Let's bounce off the possibility of, so medication remains a possibility with or without this program, correct?
Medication remains a possibility both with and without the program, okay? What the medication does is the medication helps with focusing, okay? The medication, in a sense, and again, this is my interpretation, is that the medication is task-specific. The task we want to impact is the ability to pay attention both visually and auditorily. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And basically pay attention in ways that is required in the classroom and in other areas of life. So what the medication does is the medication makes it possible for the child to focus.
And which, you know, may help learning some of the structures and skills necessary to lifelong manage attention.
So for some kids, especially if they're, think of ADHD, I think of ADHD on a continuum from 1 to 10. Some people are impacted a little bit. Some people are impacted a lot. and they're very, very disorganized, and they're very inattentive, and they have great difficulties paying attention. And for children who need medication, this program is also very, very useful. We educate about the medication. They would see the psychiatrist through our program. Our psychiatrists are excellent. They're child board certified psychiatrists, and they do an excellent job, and the whole, there's a team that coordinates, and you know, we give very, very good service through this program. Many children need medication, many children don't need medication, but they need the skills. So for some kids, they're going to receive medication, and they're going to receive the program in terms of the skill base. We're going to work with the parents, with the children, with the school, and some children will have the same services without the medication. And that decision is based on a medical evaluation by the psychiatrist, who basically has input from the school, from the parent, from the child. It's the decision that everyone makes.
Okay. When, and the same kind of criteria applies then to your intervention model for attention deficit. It's something that everybody kind of sits down together and says, on a 1 to 10, where are we at? And
well, basically with the intervention model, the parent and the client, or parents and the clients, are presented with the model. They're presented with what the model consists of in terms of the interventions, the skill-based program, what ADHD is, the strengths associated with it, the problems associated with it, what we do in terms of this program. And if they are interested, they basically make a commitment to work with us, and we make a commitment to work with them. And then the case manager starts working with them and develops a relationship.
What are some, for people out there who may, whose lives may be impacted by attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, what are some of the interventions that, that they might see in this model? Walk us through a couple, you know.
Well, let me put it a different way. I'm going to rephrase what you've asked, okay?
Please.
The model's very, the interventions are very structured. We have a series of stabilizing management tools that we teach the child, we teach the parent. We have components that have to do with problem solving, role playing. Role playing is something that is a term that's bandied about, but it's taught in a very specific manner. If I want to teach somebody how to solve a problem with role playing, what I'm going to do,
give us a for instance.
Well, let me continue. What I'm going to do is I'm going to demonstrate the skill first, okay? I'm going to demonstrate the skill, a specific skill. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to have the client utilize the skill. I'm going to model for them, and then they're going to basically act that skill. And then we're going to role play the situation. And after that, we're going to process what happened. And then we may role play another situation on a similar.
What's a skill that you might be role playing?
A skill that I might
for
be.
For example. Yes.
Okay. If a child doesn't know how to talk to a teacher, for instance.
Okay. So talking to a teacher.
Talking to a teacher in what's called an appropriate manner, asking questions for, say, a child who's very avoidant or very shy. Then I would role play that with the child. I would basically introduce how I would talk to the teacher, find out if that feels like a good thing for the kid to do, and then the child would basically follow my lead, and then I would be the teacher and the child would be the child, and we'd pretend we were in the classroom and role play it. And then I would find out how the child saw, felt, and thought about it. And then we'd modify it if necessary, but if not necessary, we'd have a way for that child to approach the teacher perhaps the next school day.
And they'd go and try it, I suppose.
Yes, they'd go and try it.
And then they'd come back and let you know how it worked?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you'd be like, okay, so what happened? Well, I raised my hand. I guess that's probably the first one of the ways we get teacher's attention.
It can be so simple in terms of entering the classroom and going up to the teacher and just saying, "Hi, Mrs. Gonzalez. It's nice to see you. It could be, I saw a little dog on the sidewalk. It's just starting to
engaging.
Engage, right. It's engagement. One of the things we do is we teach, one of the ways to get attention with ADHD kids is you, especially for a parent or even for a teacher, you don't want to call across the room. Okay? If you call across the room, many times the child's not going to pay attention. And with your other children who aren't ADHD, you can call across the room and get their attention. But what happens is people get very frustrated if they call across the room. So we teach them to touch, look, listen. We teach the kids. And we teach the parents. So if my kid is going across the room and I want to get his attention, I walk over, I touch him on the shoulder, he turns to look at me, I point to my mouth, and I say, look to listen. Because children who are ADHD many times need to look at the person to listen to them. The other thing about ADHD is for me, I don't have ADHD. For Scott, I suspect, I'm not sure, do you have ADHD? He doesn't have ADHD either. Okay, so for us, paying attention and focusing is one step. For kids who are ADHD, it's a two-step. First they need to focus, then they can pay attention. Now, that's difficult for most people to understand that it's a two-step process, because for those of us who aren't ADHD, it's a one-step process. I look, I pay attention, I'm focused. With kids who are ADHD, you need to get their focus first, then they can pay attention. It helps to think about it in terms of being two steps. So with the touch, look, listen, and I can't demonstrate it here. I'm very visual and it's very hard. But I can't demonstrate it here.
Those of you at home.
You wish. Scott's right across from me. If he was ADHD, what I would do, I would touch him on the shoulder. I would make sure he was looking at my face as I talked to him. So touch, look, listen. As soon as I touched his shoulder and he looks at me, I have him focused. Then he can pay attention. Now, if I lose his eyes, if he looks at Mario...
Or at the clock,
or at the microphone in front of him...
Or off into space somewhere.
Then I've lost his focus, and he's not going to pay attention. So what I need to do is make sure I have his eyes, so he'll hear. So one of the things I want with ADHD kids is... If I want them to hear me, if I want them to hear the teacher, they need to be looking at them. They listen with their eyes as well as their ears.
It occurs to me that might be a good kind of assessment tool almost, huh?
I don't know about assessment tool, but certainly it's the skill you want to teach kids.
If you notice that somebody who doesn't seem to be paying attention without the visual contact, that's kind of a clue, perhaps, that maybe...
Focus
and attention or disconnect with
them. I don't want to complicate matters, but some children are primarily auditory learners. So with a child who's primarily an auditory learner, if you demand they look at you, these are the kids who really, really to listen closely, and they're very sensitive to music, to listen very, very closely... They'll avert their eyes or they'll look at something without a whole lot of stimulation, like the surface of a wall, and they'll listen closely. But for them to pay attention very, very finely, auditorily, they want to shift their eyes so they're not looking at what they're paying attention to. And they're primarily auditory learners. We don't see them a whole lot. What we see are primarily the other type of ADHD. The children who pay very close attention in an auditory manner and tend to shift their eyes, they tend to be very musical. They make lots of distinctions in sound. Okay. So And I didn't want to bring that up particularly because I don't want to confuse the issues. Most of
that could be a whole show all in its own, couldn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it could be a whole show all in its own.
So you've got, so and you've given us this a couple of very good examples of interventions in this model. There are many interventions in this model, I suspect.
There are, yes. It's a quite comprehensive, concise model, and it goes step by step, and it really, really does teach skills, and people get very proficient at some of the skills as long as they apply themselves. We create relationships with our clients, and we have about 10 to 12 sessions that go over the space of about 2 months, I think it's 3 to 4 months.
And this is done through our rehabilitation technicians, aka case managers?
Case managers, yes.
No, they're bigger than that now.
Yes, the case managers. And again, when medication is involved, that's taken care of by the psychiatrist, and that's also monitored by the psychiatrist.
Have you been able yet to work off of baselines or establish some sort of data for you, this program, to see
yes.
how much improvement typically you
yes.
get?
Yes, we have some pre-tests and we have some post-tests. And since this program started not very long ago, I don't think the data's in, but I tend to do the supervision. I'm doing the supervision for the case managers, and it looks pretty positive. The people that we have that are in the program are making progress.
So this is not your grandma's behavioral health. This is specifically focused on interventions related to specific disorders in ways that data shows result in actual improvements and actual greater life satisfaction.
Yes, this is basically it's skill-based, and it's teaching quite a few skills, and it's helping parents shape behavior. It does have a component that looks at interventions in the school and how to modify some of the things in the school. And these are very, very simple, but they make a big, big difference. The touch, look, listen is, when I say it, people go, yes, I get it, because it's right there. This isn't difficult to do, but people don't tend to put things together like this. But intuitively, they get it, and they're eager to do it. A soothing, a calming exercise you can do with children and adults is everybody loves to color. It's a very calming thing that children can do, parents can do with children. One of the things ADHD children respond to is being stroked and being cuddled. And it can be a very calming thing to do in the evenings before bed.
Hey, that's everybody, you know, I just, as a non-ADHD person, I want to say, hey, cuddling is pretty cool.
Right. And it's also, but just the stroking also is very calming for the parents. And it really strengthens
you know,
that
we don't spend a lot of time
parents.
Soothing each other.
We don't spend very little time soothing each other. Our lives tend to be very, very, very fast.
On to the next cup of coffee.
On to the next cup of coffee.
Marilyn, how's the show been for you? We're out of time. How has it been for you? Let's take a minute and process this experience. This is because this was
are
your
we
first.
On air?
Yeah. This was your first time, though. So.
Yes. This is my first time. It's different. I mean, I've got this great big black microphone right in front of my face, and I'm not used to having these things. And
you did a remarkable job not being too distracted by it in the course of presenting.
Well, thank you. It's been interesting.
It's been good having you here. This is an hour of good radio, just kind of in retrospect. And this
okay.
will all be edited out of the podcast anyway. So.
Really?
Yeah. Well, this last little goopy part, yeah.
Are people hearing it?
Yeah, no, we've broken down the wall of radio. We're actually breaking all the rules right now.
But why are you talking on the air then?
Because it's fun. It's good.
Oh.
You know, it's good to let people see that we're also human beings and
part
of the community.
I am a card-carrying human being. Can
yes.
I be funny now?
Yeah.
I'm a card-carrying human being. I like Radio Land USA. Ask me back anytime.
We certainly will. Thanks for coming aboard, Marilyn. Thank you all for listening. This is Let's Talk About It, sponsored by Behavioral Health. Look for the podcast in about a week on KXL Radio. And join us again next week. We'll get another show for you, okay? Thanks. Bye-bye.
you've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.